At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. If your home or business has pests, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. This should have been a landmark day. The investiture ceremony for Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson at the Supreme Court. But it comes instead just as the court she joins has lost its last shred of authenticity and relevance and honesty and credibility, and we are forced to look at it and say there are no other options. It must be reconceived, or at least enlarged, or if there is nothing else to do, it must be ignored. Justice Samuel Alito is a prejudiced, dishonest, lazy, proselytizing fraud with a messiah complex and an agenda to serve not the law, not the democracy, not the nation, but to serve his own religious beliefs. He is intent on turning the Supreme Court into the Republican Supreme Religious Court and intent on turning this nation into a theocracy, and he has gotten quite a head start on both. And yet somehow, this week, on the eve of the investiture of Justice Jackson, he has reached a personal new high in low. It goes without saying that everyone is free to express disagreement with our decisions and to criticize our reasoning as they see fit, Alito said in response to a stark but mild reality check from Justice Elena Kagan. But saying or implying that the court is becoming an illegitimate institution or questioning our integrity crosses an important line. Mr. Alito, you have no integrity left to be questioned. Mr. Alito, your institution consists of at least four justices who perjured themselves under oath to the Senate in their confirmation hearings. One of your justices, Mr. Alito, is married to a woman who needed to testify yesterday to the House committee investigating the attempt to overthrow the government of the United States by coup, and she had to reassure that committee that she never discussed any of her involvement with her husband, the justice. These justices, Mr. Alito, are illegitimate, and they alone would make the court illegitimate. Mr. Alito, at least one of your justices sits with you only because of the destruction of the Senate of the United States by its lead Republican member. The line, sir, was crossed when Merrick Garland was pocket vetoed. Ever since that moment, your institution has been nothing more than a tool of the Republican Party, designed to use the trappings of the law to legitimize the illegitimate and to assert integrity when there is nothing but corruption. Mr. Alito, you are a political prostitute. And Justice Clarence Thomas is a political prostitute. Justice Neil Gorsuch is a political prostitute. Justice Brett Kavanaugh is a political prostitute. Justice Amy Coney Barrett is a political prostitute. Chief Justice John Roberts is a political prostitute. Whatever you once aspired to, Mr. Alito, whatever you believed you had become when you were given your seat, whatever dignity or respect you thought you were now owed, you have long since forfeited. And forfeited beyond the most remote possibility of reclamation. You and that room full of partisan hacks have destroyed the Supreme Court of the United States, and had you either intelligence or dignity, you would resign and devote the rest of your life to seeking forgiveness for the damage you have personally inflicted upon this nation in the name of a corrupt and morally bankrupt political party, and in the name of religion. Not just your religion, but all religions, which, whatever else it is or is not, is just a belief, just a hope, just a wish, perhaps more reliable than a horoscope, but perhaps not. 2 years ago, 67% of this country said it had a great deal or fair amount of trust in the Supreme Court. Last year, that number was still 54%. As of a Gallup poll released yesterday, it is now 47%. The court's job approval in 2020 was 58%. It is now 40%. The political majority has not changed on the court since 2020. Indeed, it has not changed since 1970. The citizens of this country have not politicized their view of you and the court, Mr. Alito. It is you and the frauds with whom you sit who have politicized the court beyond this nation's ability to withstand it anymore. And it is you and the frauds with whom you sit who have now substituted the Bible for the law book. Saying or implying that the court is becoming an illegitimate institution or questioning our integrity crosses an important line. No one has said this, Mr. Alito, but you and the charlatans in robes around you have accomplished this. You are the assassins of your own institution, and you are the murderers of your own integrity, and you are the erasers of the most important line between legal impartiality and political thuggery. The very worst moments, said Justice Kagan, of the court's history, have been times when judges have even essentially reflected one party's or one ideology's set of views in their legal decisions. The thing that builds up reservoirs of public confidence is the court acting like a court and not acting like an extension of the political process. If over time the court loses all connection with the public and with public sentiment, that is a dangerous thing for democracy. To that judicious, polite, almost milquetoast recitation of facts from Justice Kagan, you, Mr. Alito, decided you needed to try to metaphorically martyr yourself and to threaten this country for having had the nerve to recognize your illegitimacy and the audacity to question what had been your integrity. The Alito Court, And make no mistake, it is his court. John Roberts is sinking into utter irrelevance. The Alito court is to hear cases starting next month that could roll back affirmative action in the admissions offices at Harvard and the University of North Carolina, and thus at every American college and university. The court may circumscribe the Voting Rights Act as it pertains to drawing congressional districts and African-American voters. It may rule to permit rogue state legislatures to eliminate election results at will. It may repeal laws that protect LGBTQ customers from discrimination by businesses. Do we expect the Alito court will examine legal precedents or the opinions of televangelists? You probably already know of Alito's speech in Rome in July at the Notre Dame Religious Freedom Summit, which, as with most religious conferences, is misnamed and was actually the Notre Dame Religious You Have No Freedom But to Obey Us Summit. You probably heard him mock the world leaders who were appalled by the court's dishonest overturning of Roe v. Wade with its reliance on the legal wisdom of a judge who used to oversee the hanging of witches. You may have heard him bash secular values and the, quote, new moral code. But you probably did not hear him tell this meaningless anecdote, which he told with the gravity of someone who has just watched the burning of an original copy of the Constitution.
I'm reminded of an experience I had a number of years ago in a museum in Berlin. One of the exhibits was a rustic wooden cross. A young, an affluent woman, a well-dressed woman, and a young boy were looking at this exhibit, and the young boy turned to the woman, presumably his mother, and said, "Who is that man?" That memory has stuck in my mind as a harbinger of what may lie ahead for our culture.
Samuel Alito believes it is his job. It is the job of an American judge. It is the job of the Supreme Court. It is the job of the United States of America government to force its citizens to be able to identify a man on a cross who may or may not have ever existed, to force them to honor the businesses that have built themselves into world-influencing powers by attributing quotes to this potentially fictional character, and to defer to the interpretations of what this man who may or may not have ever lived had to say about what the laws of the United States of America should be and who the President of the United States of America should be. Mr. Alito, that rustic wooden cross, I have a suggestion where you can put it. There is one last vital point about what Samuel Alito said and the danger it represents and the necessity for action that it causes. When Alito says questioning the court's integrity, quote, crosses an important line, what line does he mean? What also does he believe should be done after whatever that line is crossed? I believe the answer is far more ominous than is currently being recognized. On June 23rd of this year, I tweeted, forgive the self-quote, "It has become necessary to dissolve the Supreme Court of the United States. The first step is for a state the court has now forced guns upon to ignore this ruling. Great. You're a court. Why and how do you think you can enforce your rulings? Hashtag ignore the court." It's a tweet. 3 days later, on June 26th, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida retweeted my remarks and added, quote, "It is a federal offense to incite rebellion or insurrection against the authority of the United States or the laws thereof." What Rubio all but said there, what Alito has opaquely danced around when asserting that questioning the court's integrity crosses an important line, is that they intend not just to suppress criticism of a corrupt, prostituted Supreme Court, but to criminalize it. If Marco Rubio can look at a tweet calling for states to ignore court rulings, which is one of the core values of his Republican Party, if he can do that and imply that I am guilty of inciting rebellion and insurrection by tweeting, then unfortunately we have to take Alito's reference to saying or implying that the court is becoming an illegitimate institution or questioning our integrity crosses an important line, not as a defensive, holier-than-thou spasm, but as a threat to every one of us. Still ahead on Countdown, The Self-Own by Ben Shapiro in Worst Persons. And frankly, a lot of the anniversaries I bring you in Things I Promised Not to Tell are kind of lame. They're off by a day or a week or a month, or it's a clunky anniversary year like the 17th or the 3rd. Not today. September 30th, 2012, 10 years ago to the day. Very probably the most important day of my life. All because the girlfriend needed what she called a puppy fix. That's next. This is Countdown. So the best way to get what you need is to be prepared and to do it early, like World Series tickets. My dad had the foolproof plan for getting us World Series tickets behind the home dugout in 1976, 77, 78. He bought season tickets in the Bronx in 1972. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/countdown. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology hits the front row to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/countdown to try it for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/countdown. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix. Terminix can't help you run for office or take on the country's biggest problems, but they can help you solve one of the peskiest problems at home, pests. You know, the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, even the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. Their expertly trained technicians may not know intricate political strategy, but they know their local pest pressures. And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good. Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it, Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's T-E-R-M-I-N-I-X.com to book online today.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Still ahead on Countdown, I need a puppy fix. This will be explained coming up. First, in each edition of Countdown, we feature a dog in need whom you can help. Every dog has its day. This is a bigger picture, every dog has its day, than usual. This is an entire dog rescue that needs your help. The Gulf Coast Humane Society in Fort Myers, Florida. I don't have to tell you what they are facing right now. It is still unclear whether their dogs and cats got through it, or their building got through it, or if they got through it. But already Giving Grid is running a fundraiser trying to get them $10,000 with which to restart. If you can help, go to Giving Grid, search for Gulf Coast Humane, or just look for my tweet on my feed for dogs in need at Tom Jumbo Grumbo. And thank you very much. Still ahead, coming up, things I promised not to tell. I didn't promise not to tell you about her. I just haven't. Please meet Stevie. First, the daily roundup of the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens who constitute today's worst persons in the world. The bronze, right-wing troll Ben Shapiro, the little boy who once explained that climate change was no problem because long before the oceans actually rose, people with waterfront homes would simply sell them. He's back with another snippet of genius. To quote a tweet, this Lizzo flute controversy is a perfect example of what I have termed face tattoo phenomenon, the phenomenon whereby someone does something deliberately controversial in an attempt to draw attention and then acts offended when you notice, unquote. In other words, Ben, your entire career. The runner-up? Everybody mentioned in this next story. This is like a collision of worst persons. The Saudi blood money golf tour with the ironic name Live Golf is reportedly close to a deal to show its tournaments on the cable outlet Fox Sports One. Well, so what? Well, unlike every other sports rights deal in television, in this one, the sports league will be paying the TV network, not the other way around. Nobody wanted to touch the Saudi blood money golf tour, so CEO Greg Norman had to resort to buying time on Fox, like an infomercial for electric heating hangers or something. Golf Digest reports that LIV employed an unusual intermediary back when it thought it still would get paid rather than having to pay, Jared Kushner. Kushner finally begged Lachlan Murdoch to help him out. So the Blood Money Golf Tour is using Mr. Blood Money's son-in-law to pay Blood Money to the Blood Money TV network. But our winner, Politico's John Harris, he has written a ponderous piece called The Reporters Who Proved That Journalism Is More Powerful Than Trump, in which he defends what he mistakenly calls CNN CEO Chris Licht's plans to steer the network back towards journalistic traditionalism, never once mentioning that Licht's boss doesn't want that. He wants a network full of Brett Bears. Harris also never mentions Paste for some reason. Harris also never mentions that Politico is now owned by a German right-winger who wrote, "Do we all want to get together for an hour in the morning of November 3 and pray that Donald Trump will again become president?" But Harris did go to the online equivalent of a massage parlor about the others in journalism that he's referring to, summing up the rest of his piece by writing, quote, "No, journalism doesn't need to reinvent itself in the face of the Trump challenge. It just needs more reporting of the kind offered by Maggie Haberman, Susan Glasser, Peter Baker, who's her husband, Alexander Burns and his co-author, Jonathan Martin, Josh Gerstein, and Alex Ward. Haberman, Glasser, Baker, Burns, and Martin all wrote Trump books this year featuring galling and sometimes important revelations about Trump's threat to American democracy that were all 18 months old or older because Haberman, Glasser, Baker, Burns, and Martin had been sitting on, hiding, suppressing, secreting, and embargoing breaking news that should have been reported in their own breaking news outlets because that's kind of the point of breaking news. They hid all this stuff until they could monetize it with book deals. What Harris does not understand is that American, quote, journalism, unquote, did reinvent itself. The overriding principle used to be get a scoop, get it in the paper or on the air as soon as possible because that's your job and that's your only actual value to society as well. It is also, and I speak as somebody who broke a lot of sports news, including the Wayne Gretzky trade and Michael Jordan's first dalliance with a comeback, it is the joy of doing a journalism. You have the story, and nobody else does. But now Haberman, Glasser, Baker, Burns, Martin, and John Harris think the point of American journalism is how much money you can make by withholding vital public information. The reporters who proved that journalism is more powerful than Trump is Harris's title. Yeah, proved journalism is more powerful than Trump in moving merchandise. John, I've completely lost the journalistic thread, Harris. Today's worst person in the world! Now to the top of the countdown and my favorite topic, me, and things I promise not to tell. I never promised not to tell this. I just haven't told it to you yet. This is exactly the right day to tell you. Olivia looked at me and said, "I need a puppy fix. 10 years ago today, my girlfriend's family dog was dying. My girlfriend would not say it. Her folks would not say it. The dog, a Jack Russell Terrier named Casey, did her best to be the only truthful one in the bunch, moving purposefully and unsteadily with every step and looking out at her world with a seeming mixture of acceptance and sadness and especially regret that the one time she really needed her bipeds to speak for her, they would not. I just need for dogs not to mean sadness, Olivia said, just for a while. Can we go to that pet shop on Lex? I mumbled that we could go, but that I had resisted the dog entreaties of 11 girlfriends before her, and I would successfully resist hers. I had always loved dogs, but I was really allergic to them, and my doctors had all said that even hypoallergenic dogs were a crapshoot. She said, I do not want a dog. I am not trying to convince you to get us a dog. I just want to hold a puppy for a little while. She paused, as she always did when she felt both hopeless and angry at being at the mercy of feelings, and she lapsed into the shrug emoji, as sappy as that sounds. Olivia, the girlfriend, the former girlfriend, let me make this easier on both of us. We'll call her TFGF, the former girlfriend. TFGF and I left for the pet shop in mid-afternoon, and I told her my true fear here, that my native but dormant shared affinity with dogs would, all of a moment, spring fully grown from my soul, and I would blurt, just give me all of them. I mean, what kind of life could I offer a dog? I was on television, and thus always in a television studio, and thus never home for play or walks or just the prevention of canine loneliness. I had a girlfriend who lived out of town half the time. I was clueless as to every practical aspect of the dog thing. I had littered the continent with dead houseplants, and I no longer thought myself capable of pulling my ego out of my backside sufficiently to take care of fish. I had literally not had a pet of any kind since 1967. I had come to terms with living in a wistful, hazy world in which I might inadvertently have a dog pal for a few moments,
but almost never indoors and never without the pang of knowing that the hello itself contained the start of the goodbye. And I was allergic. I was allergic to the obvious big, furry, friendly dogs, and I might be allergic to the ones that were billed as non-allergic. And if I disobeyed this immutable canon, the buried tears of permanent exclusion might be replaced by far worse ones of separation and loss. Me? I would get over it, probably, but without overvaluing myself too much. To betray the love of a dog? To send a dog back because of allergies? As TFGF and I approached the shop, there was, as there almost always is there, a small crowd undulating around it. Lexington Avenue's narrow sidewalks make these human clots easier to form, even late on the first Sunday of autumn. There is also an obstacle course of grates and cellar doors and bikes chained to poles and parking meters and canopies for diners and restaurants and mattress showrooms and other places that are not quite seedy, but also aren't quite your first choice. The uptown edges of the grime and noise that constitute the maze of 59th Street Bridge approaches lend the place a congested feel even when it's otherwise quiet. We are three blocks up from the trying just a little too hard merchandising of Bloomingdale's. There are unwashed delivery trucks double parked 365 days a year, and then, totally out of place amid the prosaic trappings of a big city at its most meh, there they are, bouncing off each other, tearing impotently at other tiny heads and tails and paws, doing a seeming pantomime of dismemberment. Their yips and the crunch of the shredded cavorting paper are just audible through the glass and over the din of the street. They create an oasis of cute. And just in case you can't tell what they are, there's this big neon sign above their street front window that reads, "Puppies!" "Don't make me go in," I pleaded. She reassured me. We'd go in, she'd hold the dog, all I had to do was take a picture. "You don't understand." I reached for her hand. "What I'm trying to say is, I always wanted a dog, but I could never have a dog." Just as the door to the shop opened, she grabbed my arm. She yanked hard, she swore, and she muttered, "You'll survive, man up." "Don't make eye contact, don't make eye contact, don't make eye contact, don't make eye contact." We were going towards puppies. And past puppies, and the appearance of a small staircase to a training loft confirmed we were now going under puppies. And in the deepest recesses of the shop, there was a wall of puppies. To our right, three cages high, six across, all a yellowish beige behind a reddish-brown formica countertop, then a structural beam, and then three cages high, two across, then a corner with a small visiting pen built into the countertop, then right in front of me, the Hollywood squares of puppies. Three high, three across, and all of their inmates, all nine of them staring at me and screaming at me and making eye contact and saying via ESP, "Take me home." A salesman now introduced himself as Jeffrey, and Jeffrey asked if TFGF had any particular dog she wanted him to bring to her. "Let me see the Maltese. The girl." In that moment, two things struck me. Firstly, this was my cue to get the phone out and prepare to take the photo of her with the puppy. Secondly, the dog whom the salesman was now temporarily liberating from the surprisingly spare cage was the only living soul inside that pet shop besides me who was not making any damn noise. Every other puppy was perfecting its adolescent bark. The cats were making a bewildering variety of noises. And was that a Norwegian blue parrot squawk? Remarkable bird, the Norwegian blue, isn't it? Beautiful plumage. This Maltese said nothing. She looked like her torso would easily fit in one of my hands if she was 3 pounds, a quarter of it was hair, and half of that was curled, and presumably somebody came by every day to turn what sat atop her head into a mohawk up top and a mullet in the back. Her cage mate brother seemed a little bigger, but his eyes were clearly smaller, and their ocular contrast was immediately visible, even if you still had forlorn hopes of avoiding eye contact. His shone. Hers were illuminated. He tried to get past her into the salesman's arms. She simply lifted up her head towards him, and it actually crossed my mind that she looked like she was about to say, "Hi, Jeffrey, how are you today?" He put her gently down in the playpen at the right corner of the counter, TFGF asked if she could pick the puppy up and nodded to me to get the camera ready. Honestly, Jeffrey said, this is the sweetest dog we've had in here for months. I say that every day to almost everybody, but this time I'm actually not lying. TFGF cradled the Maltese in her arms with the dog's head facing to my right. I tapped the camera on the phone. My hand was already shaking. As I centered up TFGF and the puppy in the frame, the Maltese suddenly wiggled upright, placed her front paws on my girlfriend's chest, and just as I snapped the image, the dog reached up and kissed my girlfriend on the lips. I am, on occasion, completely incapable of remembering anything that happened in my entire life before that moment. TFGF made the appropriate sounds of approval. Jeffrey began discussing how little grooming the Maltese breed needs and the great price he could give us, and even as my head spun, it seemed silly to me that he was calculating the tax on something that was obviously, timelessly, and eternally priceless. TFGF said something about how we needed a minute outside to discuss it, and she handed the puppy back to Jeffrey, and the dog looked at each of us and as if she was about to say, "Nice to meet you." As the pup went back up into the cage with her brother, something extraordinary happened. The little girl was reaching her head up towards the spout of the cage's water bottle. With the same graceful movement she had made to bestow that kiss on TFGF, when her brother puppy abruptly body slammed her out of the way and her tiny frame bounced off the side of the cage. And then to my shock and confusion, a deep and threatening growl, a vengeful "Arr!" reverberated throughout the pet shop. The growl was coming from me. The next sounds were from TFGF. "My God, what's wrong with you?" I didn't know it at the time, but as we turned to fight our way back out through the shop to the street, I evidently half skidded into a display full of chew toys. They nearly toppled to the floor. I nearly toppled to the floor. I couldn't see, but I didn't recognize my own tears until they hit the edges of my lips. Somehow I managed to say it again, this time in despair. I always wanted a dog, but I could never have one. She suddenly realized what had happened. I'm sorry, I'm an asshole. TFGF was now holding me upright and steering me towards the door to the street. I didn't listen to you. I'm an asshole. You told me I didn't believe you. I'm so sorry. Well, now the stories came pouring out, all jumbled, one on top of the other. Tiny, the St. Bernard at the Katzensteins. He only wanted to embrace me. He wasn't trying to eat me. And the McConnon's mutt next door, Boots, used to come sit on my lap. And Tiny didn't make me sneeze. He only scared me. And the McConnon's had three boys and a mother who baked cookies by the carload lot. And Boots never left their side. And I was always at their house. And if I was allergic, how was it that I never once had a problem with Boots? How in the hell did that work, huh? And what about Vladimir, the stray cat my sister found? He used to live in the garage and behaved like a dog and liked to be carried around like a baby. And how allergic was I? That beautiful, beautiful little Maltese reached up and kissed you on the mouth. And the one time I took my dad's movie camera to the McConnon's house, half of the film was of Boots. And what if I went back and got the allergy shots again? And it was my mother who said she was really allergic, so I must be too. And what's the use? The little Maltese was perfect. And the next person who sees her will snap her up in an instant. And I asked them just to let me try a little dog who wouldn't shed. The only thing my mother would let me have were lizards. And I could take a Zyrtec every day. I'm so sorry, Tiny. I didn't realize. I never said goodbye to Boots. Maltese is gone. She's gone. She's gone. And she's my dog. I know it. I could feel it. She's my dog and she's gone. What happened next beggars fiction. It involves Rudy Giuliani and his part of this story of 10 years ago today and what happened to the dog and to me continues after this.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you run for office or take on the country's biggest problems, but they can help you solve one of the peskiest problems at home, pests. You know, the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, even the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. Their expertly trained technicians may not know intricate political strategy, but they know their local pest pressures. And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good. Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it, Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Back to the number one story on the countdown, and the day I fell in love with a dog for the first time, and my girlfriend, the former girlfriend, TFGF, and I left the puppy in the pet shop. TFGF and I were walking, me, mid-meltdown, somehow now nearing the Park Avenue Armory, one block west and four blocks north of the pet shop that I thought we were still in. To her credit, TFGF had kept me from throwing myself into traffic or dissolving into a puddle on 62nd Street. The overwhelming sensation I had was not one of having left the tiny puppy in the shop, but of having left a part of myself there. That was my dog. And what was worse was she was obviously going to be taken by somebody else even before I got back there. Even if we turned around right away, who could resist her? I certainly hadn't. My chaotic stream of consciousness monologue paused only when I had no choice but to shut up and gasp for breath. And the comments with which TFGF tried to soothe me in these moments were self-abnegating and solemn. She had talked me off the limb of my certainty that the dog had already been sold and was now steering me back towards sanity. "I had to," she would say later. "You were having a breakdown." She said we should go home, and if I wanted to talk seriously about the practicalities of owning a dog, we could do that and still get the puppy the next morning, even if it meant delaying her departure for D.C. "Don't worry, I'm sure she's still there. They were getting ready to close. She'll be there in the morning." I exhaled. And then I repanicked. She's, I sniffed anew and the tears resumed. "She's in that cage with that brother of hers? In the basement somewhere?" Before TFGF could answer, and I swear this is true, Rudy Giuliani spilled down the stairs from the armory we were passing. A cop suddenly appeared from a different nowhere and put out an arm and firmly asked us to stop walking, and Giuliani scuttled, rodent-like, into a waiting car. A wife was with him. I did not and do not know which number. The driver was already closing the door behind them when I shouted it. "How come my dog has to spend the night in a cage while that asshat is allowed to roam around this city without a leash on him?" Later that evening, TFGF said that was the first moment she thought we might just get home safe and sound after all. It was not 10 more minutes back to my apartment, and we walked it in silence now. I had long since saturated my handkerchief and some tissues TFGF had in her pockets. I was breathing deeply and restoratively now, the sniffle frequency reduced to once or twice per block. And my mind was crowded with the dogs I had known. Boots, Tiny, Vladimir the Cat, even TFGF's little Casey, dying out in Jersey and unaware of the seismic events which she had set in motion. I was thinking of other dogs, too. All of the dogs in all of the stories of James Thurber that I read on TV every Friday night. I had smiled along with his poetic descriptions of them, but never confessed I loved them as he must have. There was Samantha, whom my late friend Bruce Hagen used to bring everywhere, including our college radio station newsroom, the first really big dog who did not frighten me. My great aunt's Yorkie, whose gas was so potent that the Christmas just before I turned 9, my great uncle said he was convinced she had been a German terror weapon at Chateau Thierry in the First World War, and he and I had bonded because I knew what Chateau Thierry was. There was Nellie McNally, the only dog that any of my sometimes out-of-town girlfriends ever had actually put on the phone with me. In my mind, they all stood before me, all lined up, all quiet, smiling, all with the kindest type of, "I told you so, dummy," on their wonderful faces. And dozens more behind them, vague shapes and sizes, who belong to neighbors or co-workers past, or who are just chance encounters on the streets of any of a dozen cities decades before. "No, I'm sorry," she said. "I shouldn't have been that selfish." But now I disagreed with her, and as I unlocked the apartment door, I began to tell her of the dogs I had just been communing with in my mind, and what had suddenly become necessary, urgent, inevitable, and perfect, but about which I needed as much detail as I could in as short a period as possible. TFGF tried. "Well, you just take the dog wherever you can. My parents have been saying this a lot lately. Now they regret not doing more things with Casey. Not adventures, not kayaking, just taking her with them or going out in the yard or just holding her while they watch TV. You just let the dog in." We went through topic after topic: cleaning, training, handling poop, walks, food, puppy sitters, moving books off ground-level shelves, discipline, and most importantly of all, a backup plan in case this epiphany was false and or I was still allergic or terrified or incompetent or all three. "I don't think it'll take much to convince my parents to take her. I mean, even after Casey recovers. And I can take her with me to D.C. tomorrow. I'll bring her back next weekend so you can get the apartment ready and you can get you ready and you don't have to go in at the deep end right away." I interrupted her with a kiss. "Let's go back there before they close. I don't want to wait till morning. I'm still terrified. Somebody else will realize how extraordinary she is." Unexpectedly, I had a moment of doubt at this point. This isn't just me having a breakdown, right? I mean, she is extraordinary. I'm having a breakdown, and she is extraordinary, isn't she? TFGF stopped being nice and now for the first time looked at me like I'd just gone crazy, even though I just had gone crazy. "Obviously," she said, "that was a real kiss." The pet shop had stayed open, partly because TFGF phoned them as we hit the street outside the apartment building, and partly because they knew. "You were coming back," Jeffrey said. "You just see it sometimes. Also, you seemed kind of emotional." TFGF helpfully mentioned that I'd had a breakdown. They had all the paraphernalia ready, a little aqua bed, a series of attached gates that could be used as a pen or a barrier, a small pink blanket, a bag of training pads and the plastic pad holder, enough dry food to last 12 to 14 months, some horrific wet food that looked like a discarded early design for liverwurst, a few chew toys, a bright pink harness and a leash as light as a ribbon, a black carrying bag and paperwork with the puppy's family tree, which to my astonishment stretched back beyond her birth 1 week shy of 3 months before, through the 6 preceding generations, all the way back to 6 entire years earlier. In addition to all this, they could have included a moped, a stock portfolio to guarantee her college education, and a Maltese-sized typewriter with a 20-year supply of replacement ribbons, and I would have also bought them. Very nice lady named Ellie tried to train me to be a dog owner in about 94 seconds and handed me a voucher for a vet and a checklist of stuff to do. I signed a credit card bill. I think I used my own name. I absolved myself of the guilt of not getting a shelter dog because I was allergic and kind of had to go the shop route. Plus, I was not looking for a dog. I had actually fallen in love at first sight with this dog. And lastly, because no matter how the obvious and often tragic flaws in this system, there was no arguing with the fact that those dogs who came from a pet shop had as much of a right to a happy life as any other dog. At that moment, they produced her from the back room behind the block of cages where we had first seen her. Her curls had been fluffed up and her hair freshly brushed. It would be lovely to say she made eye contact from across the shop floor or was aware of our presence or yipped happily at the sight of me, and it would be completely untrue. The little Maltese calmly scanned the room, only occasionally glancing up at the manager who carried her, and not once at us until she was, without ceremony or comment, handed to me. Whereupon, she immediately twisted out of my trembling hands, stuck her front paws on my chest, and reached up to give me a kiss on the lips, and then another, and a third, and my sunglasses hid the tears that welled up again. I managed to ask if they all did that. No, came the answer from that salesman, Jeffrey. Honestly, like I told you, sweetest pup we've had here in months. Loves people. Loves people. I'm sad to see her go. I marveled at how light she was, and yet how articulated and strong her body was. Her eyes were far more beautiful than I had realized, oversized even for a puppy, almost no white visible, the reflection off the deep brown irises almost iridescent. And more astonishingly, this little soul, who was about 1/212th my age and about 1/87th my weight, and who had a great-great-great-great-grandmother born in 2006, when my great-great-great-great-grandmother was born in, like, 1800, she was meeting and holding my gaze with her own. Whatever I was seeing in her eyes, whatever of the inner being I was actually processing, she seemed to be doing her equivalent vetting. I gave her a little kiss and was by now not surprised when she kissed me again. The little tongue poked out a fraction of an inch, just enough so any one of us dumb, unsettled bipeds could tell she meant it. And then she relaxed from her upright pose and settled back into my arms, her head in the crook of my right elbow, in an attitude I would soon discover she would repeat every time I ever picked her up. A couple hours later, the name came to me. Her haircut. It was Stevie Nicks' haircut. I named her Stevie. We went and got Rose a year later. TFGF and I split a year after that, so it was a win-win-win. Ted, my rescue with the bad heart, arrived in 2018 and had surgery, and he doesn't have a bad heart anymore. He's fine. Mishu, my other rescue with a bad heart, was here last year and had a very happy life, just not a very long one. Mine, who is 15 and who we thought had dementia, but it was like 90% just rotten teeth. Get your dog's teeth checked. He showed up this June. It is a crowd. There are four Malteses here. But then again, I wasted the first 53 years of my life living without a dog, so I have to make up for lost time. 10 years ago today, when it became official, when I was adopted. I've done all the damage I can do here. Help me out with... Wait, hold on. Let me stop the music for a second. Stevie, do you want a treat? Do you want a treat, girl? All right, there you go. Rose, you want one? Here you go, Rose. Ted, one for you. Mine's asleep. Well, he's 15. He gets to be asleep. You want another treat? Stevie, say something. No, you don't have to sit. Just talk. This is like the third time in your life you've ever sat. You want one? Come on. All right. Okay, whatever. Help me out here. Give this thing a good review or a rating or a heart or a smiley emoji or whatever. Forward it to somebody. The Countdown theme from Beethoven's Ninth, arranged, produced, and performed by Countdown musical directors Brian Ray and John Philip Chenail. Guitars, bass, and drums by Brian Ray. All orchestration and keyboards by John Philip Chenail. Produced by TKO Brothers, with help from Stevie, Rose, Ted, and Manet. Other Beethoven selections have been arranged and performed by No Horns Allowed. Our sports music, the Ulberman theme, written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN, Inc. Musical comments by Nancy Faust, the best baseball stadium organist ever. And our announcer today was, well, who else could it be? Stevie Van Zandt. Everything else was pretty much my fault. So that's Countdown for this, the 633rd day since Donald Trump's first attempted coup against the democratically elected government of the United States. Arrest him now while we still can. A new episode Monday. Till then, I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.